Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Diecast. My name is Rootsgarn. With me, as always, are my co-hosts, Seamus.
Hi there.
Josh.
Hello.
And that's all we got going this week. The other two are apparently too cool for this week's episode, which is all right, because it's a mailbag.
They're out and fighting crime because they're secretly superheroes.
Secretly superheroes who have too much time to answer mail, which, given any given Marvel comic I read from the 70s, is not terribly frequent. Seriously, have you ever read, like, the letters that are responded to in character by superheroes in comic books? Because that is some hokey-ass shit. Like, best case scenario is it's Deadpool, and he, like, tells them that they're a bad person.
Let us spend the next hour and a half talking about the Silver Age of comics on the Diecast without mumbles.
Yes, you're right. That is a completely...
I'll bring all my anecdotes as a person who doesn't read comic books, and Seamus can pretend that he doesn't know who Batman is. It'll be great.
I'm still seriously thinking of, like, I want to get it, but I've got too much to do right now, of getting Marvel Unlimited. I've pretty much decided I'm going to get Marvel Unlimited. So one of these weeks, I'm going to come in here after having binged on a bunch of Marvel comics, and I'm going to want to talk about it for like 9 hours.
And then you'll be much more informed on how to misrepresent Marvel comics and troll Mumbles.
Does that mean if we misrepresent Marvel comics to you, you can then react the same way Mumbles does?
I think I'll be obligated to. I think that's how a fandom works.
Will you become the thing that you...
Really, your sarcastic trash-talking is just going to be coming from a more informed angle, is what's going to happen here.
And that's what's most important.
In life, really. Well, we do have a mailbag episode this week, and since, generally speaking, Mumbles and Chris's answers to these mailbags are horrifying and Chris's answers to mail, respectively, I think it's probably okay that it's just the three of us. Our only problems with mailbags are my tendency to, like, get hung up on the wrong part of a question and digress into something extremely controversial that'll flame Seamus's website for about a week. Seamus's tendency to hang around for the one thing that he knows a lot about, and Josh's tendency to find one question and then answer that question for about 15 minutes straight while the rest of us gradually drift off.
That's great.
Dream team, right?
What are we talking about? I'm sorry, I was in another window watching a YouTube video. This cat is adorable.
Question number one. How do we feel about the use of Radiant Quests in Skyrim? Where do we see the potential of randomly generated quests for other games or in the future? Don't think this one's signed, or at least we didn't copy over who sent it, so that's good enough as anonymous.
We'll call them Cheers, because that's at the end of the... Yeah. Okay, so Mr. Cheers,
ironically, Cheers has come to a place where not everyone knows his name.
So the first part of the question, Radiant Quests in Skyrim, they're pretty much there just exclusively to give you something to do, either as a diversion while you're doing
so
all the stuff,
starved for that.
Or after you do literally everything in the game. That said, they're not very good.
No.
Yes.
Like the whole format of the courier who may or may not be a nudist runs up to you and bugs you while you're doing something else and gives you a letter from a friend about where to find a hidden power in a ruins is not exactly a compelling quest hook.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, like, here's the main problem with Radiant Quests in Skyrim is that in Skyrim, you really have two incentives to do a quest. Either you're going to get something really cool out of it, or it's, like, really interesting intrinsically. Like, it's going to get something cool out of it, like, oh man, if I do this quest, I'll get the mace that turns people into, like, naked people because of a glitch that Bethesda hasn't gotten around to fixing yet.
Rutskarn, I'm certain that there is no such mace.
There's a mod for that, I'm sure.
Otherwise, I'm sure that at least half of the mods on the Skyrim Nexus would not exist.
But, yeah, so that's the first reason. The other reason is, oh, this is weird. People are disappearing from the town. I want to find out about that. And, you know, Bethesda actually has had some really good examples of the last one in Oblivion and Skyrim. That's, like, the one thing Oblivion did right. And the former one is, of course, always nice. But since Skyrim and a lot of other Elder Scrolls games, you know, don't... I say a lot, but, you know, I'll get to that in a bit later, maybe. Don't really have experience. And since money is pretty trivial, since, you know, money and skill points are trivial, since you can just go anywhere and get those, it's like there isn't a lot of incentive to do a lot of the minor quests in Skyrim except to clear out your quest log. So adding more minor quests that have no flavor whatsoever and no cool reward ever is just really boring.
How much better would these be? I mean, one of the reasons they can't have flavor is because everything is voice acted and you can't have procedurally generated voice act. How much better? Yeah, how much better would it be? Oh, and I don't really want to hear Microsoft Sam give me a quest. Oh my goodness,
Siri.
No.
Siri talking to
yes.
you. Siri insulting you while taunting you that you can't kill her because she's invincible.
I actually think that there should be a game where all the NPCs are robots, and where it reads off all the quests with like the quest text and stuff with Microsoft Sam. And in the beginning you enter in your name.
Low budget Skyrim.
Yeah, but imagine Maven Blackbriar with Siri's voice. That would be really something.
I wonder how much of a Bethesda game's budget actually goes into voice acting, because they always blow a whole bunch of money on some famous Hollywood or Shakespearean actor. Like, you know, the obvious example of, we brought Patrick Stewart into Oblivion so that he could die in the first 5 minutes. Isn't that great? He can do our trailer voiceovers. I wonder, I mean, for how incredibly shitty on the scale of decent voice acting in video games Skyrim falls, I wonder how much money they actually spent on it.
And it's killing them here, because it's not just that these texts don't have a lot of flavor, it's that they can't have any at all, because it all has to be delivered. You know, you can't just go and talk to somebody and they're like, oh, my mom or my kid, and now we're not, well, now I can't find this person. Everything has to be written on a piece of paper, handed to you by a courier or somebody who does not give a crap. Like, nobody's gonna like, here, I have a problem, and then they hand you a piece of paper on which they're pouring out their heart. The whole voice acting thing shoots itself in the foot when it comes to Radiant stuff. You can have procedurally generated, or you can have lavishly produced AAA production values. You can't have both. And I'd rather have the more meaty, the more text, than the voice acting. Because I never listen to the voice acting anyway. It drives me crazy on Spoiler Warning when we actually listen to the dialogue and we have to, instead of clicking through when you're done reading. Drives me nuts.
So, yeah. The potential of randomly generated quests in the future, I think a lot of the problems we just described are not easily fixable for games like Skyrim. So if you have a game where there is a lot of voice acting, there's a lot of, like, story context that doesn't change about what you do in the quests, and they're tied to, like, specific configurations and situations in the game world that are fairly static, and are specifically designed around that quest, doing randomly generated quests in that kind of environment would be very, like, it would be difficult to overcome the problems that Skyrim has inherent in its own, because it would be very difficult to make them not just feel canned, like, oh, look, a randomly generated quest to go kill some rats somewhere. I think if you had a game that was perhaps more dynamic, and I'm trying to think of an example and coming up short, but say it was an RPG where, while playing the RPG, certain, like maybe, like, there's a war going on in the background, and occasionally a city will switch hands, and maybe then you can get a generated quest to, like, oh, like Mountain Blade. Mountain Blade had randomly generated quests from the barons and the dukes and whatnot to, like, and one of them was like, hey, my brother, who totally literally exists in the game, like, as a person, and he was running around, and at some point he got attacked by someone else in a war and got taken captive. You know, his retinue got wiped out and he got taken captive, and now he's in a dungeon somewhere. He's in a dungeon somewhere. Could you go and infiltrate that dungeon and rescue him? And then you can go and do that, and you can totally go in stealth-wise and like try to sneak your way past guards and whatnot and rescue him. Or you can go in, you know, just swashbuckling, take on lots of guards and try to fight your way to him. Or you can take an army and besiege the town and take the town and rescue him that way. That would be an example to me of an environment where randomly generated quests could have more freedom to thrive.
Right, yeah. And right now, how it is just that the randomly generated quests have no hooks, no decent reward, and they're you're probably already doing something more interesting, so they don't add much.
Like literally, like how I play the game is usually just picking a dungeon at random and going down it. It's just a less convenient form of that. Instead of going to whatever dungeon is closest, it's going to send me to one that's a pain in the ass to get to. Like, I can't think of a less efficient way to make gameplay.
The one thing that actually would be kind of cool is if those Radiant Quest Givers would give you something that you couldn't really get anywhere else. Like, if they give you... just like a special kind... Like, you know, an Alchemist is said to have Radiant Quests where... Or Alchemists are said to have Radiant Quests where they have you go get special ingredients for them or something. And their quest rewards are potions that otherwise wouldn't spawn. Like, that's one example.
I would love it if it would choose locations based on places you haven't been yet. So if you're trying to fill in the last of the map, it's got a good chance of sending you to a place that's new to you. I would dig that. As opposed to these Radiant Quests that keep sending you to the same dungeon over and over again, so you get a bit of the Dragon Age 2 feel.
Yes. So I think that sums up our feelings on Radiant Quests in Skyrim, is... You know, good idea, really, really meh execution. Moving on to our next question of the week. This is going to be kind of a short one, I think. Dear Diecast, what do you think... Dear Diecast, how do you type with box... Sorry, like every single fucking time I read a letter or email that starts with dear, I hear Strong Bad in my head, and it's not even funny anymore. Oh my god. Well, Strong Bad email's still funny. It's just not funny hearing him in my head when I'm reading an email.
Yes.
Embrace the Strong Bad.
And Strong Bad
Come
life, yo.
Strong Bad.
Okay, in Southern California, there's a shoe style, which is like a moccasin, which has like a red bird
Wait, is
of some
this the
kind.
Question?
Like beaded. No, this is unrelated. Or like a red moccasin beaded on the top. Because. And I every time I see that, I see Strong Bad, and I have to hold it in. Because I'm like, oh man, she has some Strong Bad shoes. And I just feel really awkward. Anyway, now that very important Strong Bad digression is over, and it is apparently 2002 again. Dear Diecast, the Unreal Engine 4 launched recently, with a very interesting pricing model. A flat monthly subscription fee, and 5% off the top, is an amazing direction to go in compared to their previous pricing models, and removes the barrier
to
entry
right
for
there.
Indie developers.
Yep, Exposition I'll stop you right there. Yeah. That is my entire column this week, so no need to comment on that. Like, you're going to get an entire...
Shim is shutting it down.
Yeah. Well, I think it's cool that this showed up when I was writing an article about it, so that's handy.
This is really a failure of framing. You could have also just said, you know, I don't think it's enough to answer this question in a diecast. I'm going to write a column based on your question and post it to a very important website, because I like
it. Yeah, let's go with that narrative.
Yeah, that's what I did. That's what I meant to say.
Neko for inspiring Seamus to write a column.
Yes. Thank you, Neko, for inspiring Seamus to write a column, Seamus. Because that's very hard for wafers to do, and we should recognize that. Also, Neko wafers taste like shit. Is it just me? Is anybody
Not
like
Not shit. Chalk.
I don't know. Are those... What are those? Are those, like, Japanese cookies or something?
No. They're just little really hard... They're little really hard sugary discs, and they don't have any particular flavor except just sugar, and they're dusted with powdered sugar. So they look and feel like colored chalk.
That sounds awful.
Yeah, they're fucking.
This is my anti-sweet tooth talking of.
They are a Halloween classic because they're incredibly cheap and you can just buy. Like when I was a kid, it was always the Sweethearts because there's very little candy in them, and Necco wafers because they're cheap as hell. Were like the people that, you know, wanted to.
Are these the ones that are they're like sort of half sphere shape, like half of a crushed sphere shape.
No, they're coin shaped.
They're like golden brown on the outside.
They're coin shaped.
They're about the something, dimensions of a quarter, I think.
Just imagine something they'd make. I'm willing to bet like a small amount of money that Necco wafers were invented in wartime or something, like to conserve actually good stuff that people like to eat.
Like they're like made from repurposed like wood pulp or like melted down tires that they just dusted with sugar.
Fucking Necco wafers and stop complaining.
But you know what? Oh. When I got them in my Halloween candy, I ate them all. So there you go.
1847.
I ate them last, but I ate them.
See, if you just didn't eat them, then maybe they'd get the idea. Actually, no, they would because someone still bought them. So I like blaming you, though. So let's still stick with it's your fault.
Okay, you know what, guys? I'm going to go ahead and like call this right here. Like, I got that right. They were invented in 1847, but Necco wafers, quote, during World War II, the United States government ordered Necco to produce its wafers for soldiers overseas.
Oh, boy.
So they're made to be durable.
Yeah, because they had nothing good to set. Yeah, they're durable, they hold up, and there's nothing valuable in them, so.
There's no way it'll decay. They're like Twinkies. They'll just stay, quotes, fresh forever.
Okay,
the ones
so
we're
that,
eating are probably
a
still.
Complete, that is completely bullshit. Twinkies do not stay fresh forever.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Twinkies actually go bad relatively quickly.
Yeah, they go bad like within a few months.
Well, I am fully prepared to believe that the Necco wafers we're eating today are just the runoff from a really big batch.
Would have built in 1847.
We're mass-produced in World War II. They had too many, and we're still just working our way through that stockpile.
They'll produce the video game of snack cookies.
Like, someday, that giant warehouse will finally be empty, and they'll produce some new Necco wafers, and we'll discover they're incredible. They're supposed to be light and fluffy.
And then suddenly the old Necco wafers will be, like incredibly valuable to collectors who want, like, a piece of Americana that is no longer made.
Ending a
Cryptonomicon next.
They bust open the ground and they just find boxes of Necco wafers. Okay, back to the actual subject that we are, the theory supposed to be discussing.
What is the actual subject?
We're between emails now.
Dear Strongbad, how do you feel about the fact that the in-development World of Darkness MMO has been cancelled? Is this a tragic loss, or have they just avoided a situation like Elder Scrolls Online, where an MMO launches and fails to meet expectations from fans? Sincerely, David B.
I mean, like,
well,
both.
Dave B.
I'm sure they put a lot of money into it.
Is it
Dave? It was probably not going to be very good.
Is it Dave B. or Dave B?
Dave B. I leave that to Dave B. to explain. But more on point, yeah, so we went over these emails right before the show, and Seamus didn't know that they were making World of Darkness MMO.
No idea.
So this was CCP Games, which are the same guys who did EVE Online, the well-received, incredibly successful MMO, and Dust 514, I think, which was the significantly less well-received PlayStation 3 exclusive shooter MMO that nobody plays anymore.
Okay. Just operating off of stereotyped assumptions of what CCP cannot do, I think they are the worst company to handle World of Darkness for an MMO, because EVE is all about the system that like holds up this world the players are populating and making cool. World of Darkness is all about the tone and the texture. It's all about like this sort of... It's about this kind of, like, melodramatic mood No, I say melodramatic, but I mean, that's actually, like, if you strip away the negative connotations of the word, it's pretty appropriate. It's about creating this very, it's all about the feel of the game, and I don't think CCP has demonstrated that they can pull that off as much.
Yeah, EVE is extremely system-based, and it relies a lot on other players to create the atmosphere.
I mean, World of Darkness was behind for years in its systems, and it was successful because people liked the world of darkness in World of Darkness. My friend, a math major, was describing how, like, their system for adding dice to rolls literally accomplished exactly the opposite of what you would want, in making it so that, like, if you were really good at something, you had a really high chance of disastrous failure. And people still bought those fucking games by the thousand.
It should be noted, for the record, that the World of Darkness MMO was announced on the 11th of November 2006.
Yes.
So that was 8 years ago, and apparently it was the focus of development from March 2009 and on. So this game was in production for a really long time, and
nothing came of it. It was in production in the sense, not like so much in the sense that you would see like screenshots or previews, but in the sense that if you went on Wikipedia, you'd be like, oh, they're making a World of Darkness MMO? I did not know that.
Yes.
It was announced to people whose job it is to notice when things are announced. It wasn't something that had a whole lot of hype behind it. I actually kind of wonder how World of Darkness is doing in general these days. Like, I don't know. I mean, I was a member of a role-playing games club, and it was all about, like, you know, we had a pretty diverse range of games we played. You know, we played the Dungeons & Dragons, Pathfinder, the Shadowrun, Fate Core, you know, even really obscure stuff. Like, you know, we played the Iron Kingdoms game, we played Maid, of all things. There really weren't any World of Darkness games going on.
Huh. A ringing endorsement.
Yes.
Yeah.
We did eventually get a Changeling book added to the library, but, I mean, the only guy who wanted to play Changeling was literally the guy where we all said that we would rather die than play Changeling with that guy, so.
I lament when stuff like this gets canceled and we don't get to hear the story. Like, how good of a story must it be? You work on a game for years, you produce assets, people came into work every single day, talked about what the game was going to be like, what they were doing, what the zone was, how they wanted it to look when they were done, had meetings, developed art, worked on the art pipeline, did some writing, consulted with people that, you know, did the original material, and then it just vanishes into a black hole and we don't even know what happened or why it went away. And
yes.
I would love to hear from those people that went into work every day and worked on that. That would just be
from
amazing.
What I'm reading, I'm not sure there was actually a core World of Darkness team. Apparently, a lot of the people who worked on the World of Darkness stuff also worked on other stuff, like EVE and Dust 514 while it was being made, which
yeah,
might explain
a
incredibly long, even for MMO standards, development cycle.
Hey, if you're passing by the World of Darkness room, maybe do a little bit of design here and there.
Yeah, that's how you design an MMO, in your free time, in your spare moments. You just come in and you MMO for a few minutes, and then you leave
again. Company. Important lesson, you cannot design a game the same way you play a game of magnet chess. Like, it doesn't work that way.
Apparently into April 2013, during the EVE FanFest, one of the guys on the project said that they were still making tools and in pre-production, which was like, 7 years after the game was announced? So maybe it was no significant loss of money after all.
Yeah, I not a whole lot has been lost here. And I say that not just because I don't have any particular fondness for the World of Darkness setting. I say that mostly because a World of Darkness MMO doesn't have as much potential as I'm sure a dozen people are lining up in the comments to tell me it has. Don't get me wrong, I'm sure the World of Darkness MMO in your head would be really fun and cool and interesting. But let me put it this way, the World of Darkness MMO that they would make would be interesting to a select group of fans, and would have some degree of broad appeal and would fail in about a month.
A game that's based entirely on flavor like that is going to translate really, really bad to an MMO unless they had a remarkable different approach. Like, it is going to be terrible as a bog standard MMO, which I'm sure this was.
I mean, I'd be willing to say that CCP, of all companies, would perhaps not make a WoW clone.
Fair enough.
Given the other games that they've made, I'm not confident that they'd actually have any interesting gameplay there, but I'd be willing to give them the benefit of the doubt, having not seen anything else about it, that the game would not eventually turn into a WoW clone like The Elder Scrolls Online and WildStar.
WildStar! Still broken up that game turned out to be so awful. I am just really, really sad. I wanted to...
We're at the point here where we haven't really had a real MMO success in a long time. I mean, there was Guild Wars 2, and that's basically it.
That's
so,
the closest
I mean, like,
we've
I
had
wonder
to a success,
if this genre
yeah.
is just on its way out, like adventure
on
games
its way
and
out.
Flight sims were. I mean, there's still that allure of maybe we can be the next World of Warcraft and print money for everyone. But I think after 5 years of every single game that tried that failing miserably, I wonder if it's going to be, like, if we're going to see more games along the lines of, like, War Thunder, World of Tanks, that are, like, semi-MMOs, that are more free-to-play...
Semi-MMOs.
...and smaller multiplayer, like, lobby systems, or Guild Wars 1 style, like, almost Diablo co-op level... rather than full-blown World of Warcraft-style, open-world, lots of people on the same server all at once MMOs. I mean, even by that definition, even Dark Souls and Dark Souls 2 are sort of MMO games because of the way that their multiplayer works.
I think the past couple years what we've been seeing is the last of the attempted MMO clones. Like, these are games that were began 5 years ago, where people thought they were going to make an MMO clone, and those games are slowly working their way out of production and coming into the world and dying. And I'll bet more are not entering into production. So at some point we're going to run out of these games and people are going to stop trying to make them. And I'll bet you that day is coming soon if it hasn't happened already. Like, WildStar is probably the last of the attempted WoW clones.
Okay. This next question is probably just going to send us all on a 15-minute tirade of bile and disgust, which is why I came up with it. What is your least favorite game we've done for Spoiler Warning?
Oh,
Josh.
Boy.
Josh. My answer is Josh.
I am the least favorite game you did on Spoiler Warning?
Yes. Yes.
My shame is I'm touched.
It's you. You're happy just to be nominated. See, this is why you're my least favorite.
I could never have even asked for this. I got to work on my acceptance speech.
Okay, go ahead. Somebody else answer, since I used my answer to grief Josh.
I think there's two ways you could look at this question. There's, like, the worst game in terms of, like, the game that we least, like, that was the worst, or the game that was the most of a train wreck of a season. A game that we all didn't like while we were playing it, and that turned the season into just way too much bile, and maybe the game wasn't as bad as we portrayed it, but it was by far the worst game, like, game season that we've done. I would say BioShock would fit that second definition. I don't think BioShock is the most awful game I've ever played, but that season was not a good season.
Yes.
Especially as we kept soldiering on to the end, and it got really bad. Least favorite game we played, though.
Where are the... I think the only three constants in every season...
This is difficult, because...
Every season is Spoiler Warning since Fallout 3. I was about to say every season, but fuck, Mass Effect 2. Mass Effect 1.
Well, you weren't there for Mass Effect 1, so...
Yeah.
But that was almost a different show. I mean, Mass Effect 1 is barely Spoiler Warning.
We should get Randy on the diecast.
It's
at some
spoiler
point.
Warning in the same way that it was the Beatles with Pete Best. Randy will appreciate the reference.
Yes, I'm not sure I ever posted his Best of Spoiler Warning video.
I did.
After the
I
whole,
did. I actually
oh,
liked it. I liked it. I wish he'd kept doing it.
I mean,
it.
You like we put it on the YouTube channel?
I don't think we put it on ours.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Is I don't think. Because I still have it lying around, but
well,
I don't
if
think
it's okay
ever,
with Randy,
like,
we should
saved it from the yeah.
Oh yeah, it died with Vidler.
Yeah, maybe we can do that. Yeah, did we? I'm not sure. I posted the TF2 episode. Now that I think about it, either should look into that.
Yeah.
I guess Mass Effect 3, like objectively the worst game. Like, okay, not objectively, but you know, as far as the game that. The hosts liked the least. Mass Effect 3 was probably the worst. And that season suffered from my unwillingness to actually play the game before we did the season, which was probably not a good thing either, because I was just done with Mass Effect at that point, and I didn't really want to do it, and probably might have been better off if we just hadn't done it in retrospect. But
I felt like we needed to. If we didn't, it would be hanging over us forever.
Yeah, because we started with Mass Effect. This show started with Mass Effect. We got Mumbles, and well,
and
we got Mumbles from BioShock. But we came into our own with Mass Effect 2. We had the YouTube channel, and we were doing things basically the way we're doing them now. So it was kind of that thing where like, well, we have to do Mass Effect 3, just like we will have to do Fallout 4, no matter how bad it turns out to be.
Yes.
I mean, yeah, I actually have to agree that Mass Effect 3 is probably the worst season, like, game that spawned a season we've done. Wait, actually, that wasn't what you said. What you said was that Mass Effect 3 is just the worst game. I didn't like the Mass Effect 3 season at all.
Oh, I didn't either. Between Mass Effect 3 and BioShock, I'd still say the BioShock season turned out worse, if only not necessarily because of any of the bile versus bile, but because of the production values, at least. Like, but I can't stand to go back and watch our first three seasons because it's just so bad. Yeah. Windows Movie Maker was an awful, awful program.
For me, I have a different answer than you guys. For me, the worst game that we covered, it might be Mass Effect for me, Mass Effect 3. But for me, the worst game that we covered, like the season I enjoyed the least, was Alan Wake.
Alan Wake is up there, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, Mass Effect 3, I at least liked doing it because it was cathartic. We just come in here and bitch about Mass Effect 3 and get it out of our system. Like, that felt good.
Yeah, it was easy for you.
Yeah.
With Geth floating through the floor to murder me.
Yeah, but for me, like, Alan Wake, just, it was an interesting game, and we probably could have done, like, four episodes on it, and that would have felt good. But doing a whole season on it, after a few weeks of that, I just was not enjoying the show. I didn't want to come in every day and talk about that game. I had nothing to say about it, and I didn't care.
Yeah.
That was a tough season.
My thing with Alan Wake is, it had a lot of really interesting ideas and consistently failed on the execution. And I guess I respect that more than Mass Effect 3, which just had no good ideas, in my opinion, and was just a miserable experience of bad writing. At least Alan Wake kind of tried. Mass Effect 3 was just like all of the problems of Mass Effect 2... amplified, put under a microscope, especially the ending, but everything leading up to the ending was pretty awful too. I don't want to ever touch a Mass Effect game again after that season. Unless Mass Effect 4 or whatever the next Mass Effect game they're doing, at least they're getting rid of Shepard, or at least not reviving Shepard.
I've checked out of the Mass Effect series. I don't care. They had some news a few weeks ago, and it's like Mass Effect 4 something something. I couldn't even be bothered to click on it and find out what it was. I don't care. It's not just that I'm mad about it. It's that the ending to 3 was so unsatisfying that they ruined the world that I was hooked on in one, and now it's like a TV show that I never watch. Like, I don't... You could spoil the whole game for me, and I would not care. It just doesn't matter. I know they're not going to go back to the feel of the first one. Yeah. I know they're not going to go that way, because the writers that did that work that I loved so much are gone. And the writers they replaced them with don't make work that appeals to me. Their entire tone and approach to science fiction is very boring to me, and I'm not interested in anything they... In fact, I would even say that I'm frustrated by the type of sci-fi that they write. It's the kind of sci-fi that bugs me because it's...
Starship Troopers played straight sci-fi, yeah.
Yeah, that has all this... It takes all this stuff that could be cool ideas and then doesn't do anything with it because it's too busy shooting aliens. Just
Starship Troopers that doesn't realize it's a parody sci-fi.
Oh, it frustrates me because I keep hoping, oh, are we going to talk to an Elcor? Are we going to talk to a Hanar? Are we going to do that? No, we're shooting robots
today.
No,
their planet will just get blown up off screen.
Off screen.
Cool.
Who cares?
Something about just like the desultory fashion to which you can blow up a planet in a story is like great. Like, prepare.
The Reapers stole the Death Star. They're gonna blow up planets.
Set course for Alderaan.
Now. It's fine.
Set course for Alderaan. Fire when ready. Meh. Cut to a Millennium Falcon. Obi-Wan, you feeling something?
Staring at the screen, looking bored. Like, come on, get on with it. I don't have
Obi-Wan.
All day here.
Obi-Wan, you feel something? Alderaan got blown up. Oh. Thanks for the change course. Oh. Yeah. Just, turn around. Hang a Yubi.
The apathetic version of Star Wars. I'm almost there with Dragon Age. I know neither of you guys...
I feel as though a million voices instantly cried out and said, "Nah."
I got killed, oh no.
What a...
Then they found themselves in Dark Souls. I'm almost there with the Dragon Age series. I think I'm the only one here who really liked the Dragon Age series, so probably not applicable to you guys, but I mean, I liked the first game. The first game had some annoying elements, two excessively long dungeons with no respite. That would be the Mage's Tower plus Fade and the Deep Roads, which together were probably 20 game hours, which is way too much. But I still played the hell out of Dragon Age 1, and it was the last BioWare RPG that felt like Knights of the Old Republic in the way it was constructed and the way the characters acted. It wasn't a fantastic story. There were some pretty serious plot holes in it, but it wasn't an awful game either. So I really liked it. And I still haven't finished Dragon Age 2. Like, I got most of the way through the first act and got really bored because I was like, wow, these are MMO quests, and I'm going to recycled MMO dungeons, and this is just boring, and the combat system is boring, and there's no strategy in it anymore, and all the characters are, again, boring, and it's really, really weird that you have now boiled down the romance system so much that it is literally look for the heart icon and click it if you want to romance someone, and everybody wants to romance you and will come on to you over the course of the game. Like, all six of the main characters that are romanceable will attempt to romance you during the game. And it's just like, come on. I mean,
press Y to romance Keith David.
It was effectively that, but played straight. And and it's like, come on, I don't want a bunch of player sexual NPCs. I don't want everyone in the world to want to bone me. You know, make me work.
Yeah, I mean,
for
you want some realism in your RPG.
Yeah,
I want
exactly.
people to be repulsed by me. I want people to not want to talk to me and be ashamed if they're found in public with me. I want realism. Or maybe this
I should,
is maybe
I should
that's just
press
me.
the heart button, and they should look at me for a second and go, ew.
Oh, you can't be serious.
You're joking, right? Yeah. So I keep thinking I should go back to it and play it, but nothing grabbed me the way the first game did, and they took out the interesting stuff from the first game.
I notice how this turned into another BioWare bitch session. We are very prone to these, aren't we?
Well, you knew that was going to happen when you heard the question, though. I mean, fair warning. What game did you not like the most on spoiler warning?
We're talking about played on the show. We're talking about a game neither of us has finished.
This is perhaps part of the reason why we haven't played it on the show.
True, yes.
But Dragon Age 3, it seems like they're reversing some of the bad decisions they made with Dragon Age 2. And they're doing a great big open world thing, which is interesting because The Witcher 3 is also coming out around the same time, maybe not. It got delayed to the next, like, to next year. And they're both doing the open world thing, and they're both trying to do the character-driven RPG thing. So at the very least, it should be interesting to compare and contrast. And, I consider that, like, the game that will make or break BioWare in the future for me. If I don't like it, then I will probably not buy BioWare games ever again. But I have enough, of a smidgen of potential hope that I kind of want to get excited about it. But I know that it's, like, if it's the same people doing Dragon Age 2, maybe it's probably not going to be fantastic. But I'm willing to give it little benefit of the doubt there until I play it. So that is, that is the last game that I'm going to buy at release from BioWare unless Dragon Age 3 is, like, freaking amazing.
Yeah. I think I've already sort of checked out of BioWare, but I'll probably... The thing is, I loved their early games so much that you just... It's kind of like Final Fantasy fans. You keep going back hoping to get that high again, and you don't get it. You realize it's a completely different company with different design philosophy, different writers, different approach to making a game. But for some reason, you keep coming back to the well anyway, just because you've got nowhere else to go.
Yeah, but, you do kind of have other places to go now. I guess maybe not you, Seamus, but we CD Projekt Red, they're doing BioWare-style RPGs, but significantly more nuanced with much better writing.
I absolutely give Witcher credit for being something completely good. Even though I'm not interested that much in The Witcher itself, I could absolutely believe that they could turn out a game, and I will probably even check out the next Witcher game, just keep hoping that they're going to make something that'll hook me. I think what would help is if they did something else in that. Yeah, like, give me somebody else besides Geralt. I want to try that. See if that helps.
Yeah, that's difficult for them to do within
the given
because
lore.
Geralt was the very central character. So
he was the Witcher.
They don't have a lot of other characters that they could go to and like do something with without having to create a lot of backstory that just didn't exist in the novels.
Fair. But I just want them to keep trying. I just keep hoping that it'll work for me. My problems with it are aesthetic and not fundamental.
Yeah.
I think we're, while we're here in this neighborhood, we've got time for another topic here, and Josh mentioned he wanted to get into this. Like, do we have more to say about BioWare romance, do you think, Josh?
Or about things on that same vein of, like, just in general romance in games? The way that relationships are handled in games is really weird, and we were talking about this before the diecast started, so we figured we'd move the conversation into the diecast here at some point. But I never really understood the way that romantic relationships specifically are handled in games, where it's you select the option that is obviously romance option until you hit the point in the story where the character sleeps with you in an incredibly awkward cutscene. And I don't understand why nobody has really attempted to do that differently. I mean, even with the praise we give to the their name is not easy to say, CD Projekt Red, it's basically the same path in The Witcher.
I'd say it's somewhat way worse than that path in The Witcher with
If you want to talk about like actual written romances rather than the women that you walk up to and say, "Hey, I want to sleep with you," and they're like, "Sure," The Witcher
do
one
is do this quest
is,
for me, and then I'll bang you.
A little bit better.
I want to have sex with you. Do you want to have sex with me? Yes or no?
Yeah, but there are several layers of problems I have with this. One, the idea that there's only one path to engaging a romantic relationship with a character. Like, you have to say a very specific set of things to romance a character, and only those things, I think is weird. Like, you want to roleplay, you want to have the option to roleplay lots of different characters, and yet the only way to romance someone is to be very specifically do, like, say specific things that perhaps in your head your character would not say, is odd. I mean, that's not how it works in real life. And there's, like, worse than that, when the romance, like, the all romance options seem to lead to, like, you have sex. That is the end point. The start point is you like the character. End point is sex cutscene. And that's not unprecedented in our entertainment industry, I will say, because that is the plot of most of the romance subplots in movies, is I gets the girl at the end of the movie, and then in the next movie she gets shipped off on a bus or hit by a bus or stuck in a fridge or whatever. I actually appreciated on a tangent here what Mission Impossible 4 did with Ethan Hunt's wife from Mission Impossible 3, because it looked like they were just going to, that like she had just mysteriously left Ethan, and then later on it's revealed that that I don't know if I want to go into spoilers about this, and the movie's been out for a while. It's revealed that no, she was actually killed, and one of the characters that is with Ethan was responsible for keeping her safe and failed, and Ethan doesn't know that. And then, no, later on it's actually revealed that her getting killed was a cover so that she could go into a, like, witness protection program so that she was safe, but Ethan had to pretend that she had gotten killed for another cover on a completely different op. So I appreciated that they kind of went into detail about, like, okay, we know we can't bring back this relationship for this movie, but let's not just, oh, she mysteriously left Ethan like every Bond girl does. And that they kind of hung a lampshade on the whole thing. But the problem, getting back to games, is you get to the end point of the romance thing, and perhaps you're in an RPG, and you get to the end point of the romance thing that is, like, there's not a plot-mandated sort of point where you can romance someone. So you get towards the end of the romance plot with the person, like, halfway through the game, and there's basically nothing related to that. There's no romantic relationship between your character and their character. It's just like, oh, you had sex, and maybe they smile and use a different form of greeting dialogue when you talk to them from now on, but nothing actually changes.
Okay, so what you were saying way, way earlier, and I couldn't find a point to jump on to the train, was you were saying, like, having a romance where sex isn't the end point and where things can go, you know, things are more complicated. Baldur's Gate 2 actually really did have those kinds of romance.
So I still haven't gotten around to Baldur's Gate 2. I've played most of Baldur's Gate 1, but I'm always like, I don't want to play Baldur's Gate 2 until I finish Baldur's Gate 1. And then I get bored playing Baldur's Gate 1 because it's a long game. and
so
never get around to finishing Baldur's Gate 1 so I can play Baldur's Gate 2.
The short version is that each romance is different in the game. And generally speaking, there is a point in which you establish it, and there's a point, like, there's a few, like, rocks that you hit where you have to work through things, and, you know, each person has different problems. And, you know, if it's just sort of, if you're still together by the end of the game, you're still together by the end of the game is basically the deal. And it was kind of like a real relationship in that, you know, you're not really destined to be successful. Like, sometimes they just fall apart. Like, they're actually pretty hard to get right. Like, it's not just, like, pick the options that don't make you sound like a complete insensitive dick, and they will do you. And I absolutely know that, they incorporate sex, like, way before, like, you know, the end point of the romance quest line. Like, in some cases. Like, I think there's, like, one character where, like, if you push them to have sex early on in the relationship, they will, but then they break up with you. Like, because they feel weird about it. And then there's another character who, like, you know, you get into an argument with them later about sex, and it turns out that's actually an argument about something else.
See, that's pretty cool. So,
yeah,
what
see,
the hell
it's interesting
to BioWare in the intervening, I mean,
because if that was in a later BioWare game, you wouldn't think twice about it. You're like,
yeah,
oh, I've got the sex option, let's hit the sex button. Yay, relationship one. Wait, what the fuck do you mean you're breaking up with me?
I guess Knights of the Old Republic might have been, like, I mean, it probably wasn't fantastic at this, but it wasn't, like, awful. It wasn't Dragon Age 2. And part of this is no doubt because of what I assume was Lucas sticking his hand in and saying, you can't have sex. No sex in this video game, no explicit, like the end point, like, not the end point, but the climax, high point of the relationship is
phrasing.
The camera fades out and you kiss the romantic partner you choose, either or Bastila or Karth, depending on whether you're
but that's appropriate
a male or
for Star
character.
Wars.
Yeah, that's Star Wars. It was really funny because they had to fade out the camera, I assume, because they didn't want to actually animate the kiss, which is,
oh yeah, because that's
pretty
hard.
Funny to think about. And then it keeps going, and your romantic relationship has consequences later on. So I guess Knights of the Old Republic handled this pretty well. But after that, I didn't play Jade Empire, but Mass Effect 1 had that pretty solid, like, oh, it's, you're on the suicide mission, not the suicide mission from the second game, but the one from the first game, because this is a common trope in Mass Effect. And hey, you're about to arrive at, what was the name of the planet? Ilos? No. Whatever. The Prothean planet that has the endgame stuff on it. Let's throw you into a sex scene, even if you didn't really pursue the romantic relationship thing,
terrible.
Like what happened in our season of Mass Effect 1, where we didn't like Ashley and didn't pay attention to her the whole game, and then ended up sleeping with her.
Was it Ashley? I thought it was Liara.
It was,
I can't even remember who we boinked.
I'm pretty sure
terrible?
It was Ashley. I would have to go watch the episode, but I'm fairly certain it was Ashley that we accidentally ended up in bed with, and the game was like, wait, what? What do you mean you didn't romance Ashley? Come on! So, I mean, what caused this regression? Was it because games wanted to be more like movies, and in that pursuit, they also threw out the good stuff that they did that was better than movies when it came to writing? I mean, because that's weird in itself. Games are generally much longer than movies, and they're not consumed all at once. So you don't have this need to constantly build the plot further and further up. Like, you see this in movies that are much longer, like Lord of the Rings, where they have lots of time for downtime, which feels a bit more like the writing in a book or a video game. But the idea that games should follow some sort of cinematic path, like summer blockbuster movies has always been weird to me in terms of the writing of games. So maybe it was because they did that, that they wanted to do that, that they kind of threw out the meaningful interactions between NPCs, or...
Yeah, there's a couple problems that they run into, and I think one of the big ones is voice acting, yeah. Like, it is so much easier to write a shitload of text and branching conversations and not voice act them than it is to do the opposite.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
And in voice, your conversations feel shorter. So it's like, I'm having sex with this person, I've talked to them four times, where if it's a text conversation, you spend some time reading, and it feels like you've had a long conversation because you've clicked through a lot of text. So you walk away with this impression that you've spent a lot of time with the person. Even if in gameplay terms they're both the same amount, you've exchanged more information in text. And you're dealing with this layer of abstraction. It feels almost like a time cut in a movie. You know, it feels like when you're done with the conversation, you sort of feel like, and then later. So it helps extend the relationship. And I think the other thing that killed them is this focus on sex. I think their best work was when it wasn't leading up to sex. I either because of the way that they make games or their writing, I don't think they can handle the topic properly.
No, okay, because there was sex in Baldur's Gate 2, as Rutskarn mentioned. It just, I think the key thing was when they started leading up to actual blue side boob sex scenes,
which you can clearly see happening
in Mass Effect 1. Like, that was when that really first happened, unless Jade Empire had some...
Jade Empire had... Oh, yeah, Jade Empire is the only one where you could be a dude and get two chicks at once at the same time. That's the only BioWare game to allow that. You couldn't do that as a female. You couldn't get two guys to go into the tent with you. But it was like KOTOR.
That was also their first game that had a homosexual relationship in it.
Yes, it was.
I think, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Yeah. You could be, as the guy, you could romance two different girls or a guy, or you could romance both girls at once. And as the woman, I think you could just get the guy. Maybe there was also a gay woman. I didn't explore the options fully. I'm sorry if I left someone out. But anyway, so that was sort of a unique one in that you could have a threesome. But it, like KOTOR, it was you're about to go face the big bad, and it's that night before the conflict thing, and whoever
you...
Yeah, in Mass
Effect.
It's like that, but yes. Where you're about to go to the big final conflict, but first, because we might not live to see tomorrow, let's do it. That kind of thing.
Which is, like, kind of one of the most cliched ways to do it for movies anyway.
Well, although, then again, I've never been in that situation where the world was going to end, so I don't know how likely that is. I don't know. It doesn't matter how likely it is. Is it interesting, and does it ring true?
Yeah.
In BioWare games, that's it. We shouldn't get caught up in realism. It's, does this feel like a... Does this ring true with the tone of the game and feel like it belongs here? And it never really did for me. Although, I'll admit, it might be an age thing.
So on a similar tangent... worst sex scenes in a BioWare game. What do you think? I'm going to roll with
Dragon Age,
yes.
I have a video somewhere of... I may have seen it from the 20-sided comments, so there's that. Of the Zevran and male dwarf sex scene that is just the most funny video I've ever seen.
BRB.
And it's got the it's got the corniest garage band, like, happy romance music in the background with, like, woman singing voices, like humming voices, and it's so, so corny. And, of course, you're doing it in your underwear, game underwear, that always looks incredibly shitty, because I guess, like, oh man, Fox said that you could rape people in Mass Effect... because Fox does this stuff with their editorialism, so I guess we can't have any nudity in Dragon Age. We can have blood painting everyone.
in Dragon Age, it was the shallowest. It just felt the most like video gamey kind of thing with the whole gifts. It was the most shallow, the most infantile, and yet the least sexy in the least romantic. Like, there was just nothing. Like, they were just so awkward. It was the worst of all possible worlds. You didn't get even the sweet character moments like you got in KOTOR, but you also didn't get anything titillating or edgy like the game was trying to give you, like you would expect if they're going for this type of content, because it's people doing it in their underwear. If they're going to be in their underwear, why do we have this scene? Because now, like, it looks ridiculous.
It's like the Witcher 2 thing that you commented on, where the very opening cutscene of the game, Triss is completely nude in bed, and Geralt gets up, and he's wearing, like, leather trousers.
That's it's like just fucking videogames.jpg right there.
Yes, and it's like, don't there's chafe, dude, while you're sleeping? Do you wake up with a chafed penis?
They're like, well, Triss has got to be naked. It's a mature game. People have sex. They're naked. Deal with it.
That's the silly thing.
Nobody wants to see Geralt's penis.
The Witcher 2 is so open about nudity, about female nudity. There are like 10 scenes in the course of the game where you can see some of the female characters naked or partially naked, but I guess Geralt's dick is just off the menu.
Well, okay, you get what's actually going on here, right?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's the same people who did the first Witcher game, so yeah. I understand what's going on there, yeah.
I will say I found it much less distasteful than the first Witcher game. It was a step in the right direction, I think, for what the, because I'm not
the very
being
least,
a prude.
Yeah.
I'm not against having the nudity. If they want to go for that hard R content, that's fine. I just wanted them to not be that brute force about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the nude scenes in The Witcher 2 were not, for the most part, like, cringeworthy nude scenes, like the Mass Effect 1 sex scene cutscene was kind of like pretty cringy. But the length they go to in several of these scenes to avoid showing any of Geralt's naughty bits is pretty funny.
Do you even see his bare ass at any point? I mean, I don't think so. That's just.
And there's one scene where you can go skinny dipping in this pool in Elven Ruins with Triss, and Triss is all like super naked, and then like the camera kind of moves out of the way when Geralt's getting into the pool.
Oh God! This game is a Dungeons and Dragons game run by fucking high school bros.
It's really,
yeah,
really
yeah,
funny.
Then Geralt gets in the lake. Whoa, Geralt's naked? Yeah, but his dick is totally behind a fern. You can't see it. Oh, thank goodness, man.
So, you know the worst, actually, you know, you asked what the worst sex scene in video game was. You know, it really does seem like we need a studio with more, that has more maturity, like as it proved itself with the Dredden team a little more, to handle actually having romances that are worthwhile and cool in video games. Like, I want to see how Obsidian does romance and sex scenes. I mean, I would want to see that, but then again, I've played Neverwinter Nights 2, and they were worse than Dragon Age.
Oh boy, really?
Yeah, okay, so check this out. There was a Wood Elf Druid. And I don't remember her name because I don't give a shit about
that game.
They're
always wood elves, aren't they?
But, well, yeah, I guess it makes more sense than, like, a space elf druid. Josh, what are you getting at?
I don't know. Wood elves are, like, the nature-loving, like,
they didn't exactly, like, break their creativity muscles on this one.
The hippie cleric, so I mean, you kind of seems like all of the druids are wood elves, you know?
Yes. No, okay, look, this game was super, super, super generic in a lot of ways, and this was one of them. But anyway, I just basically did the thing where I would say, I had a conversation with her early on where I was like, oh, she's the romance. This one is the romance. Awesome. And I double checked it.
I could tell too,
the moment
you meet her. Yep, you meet her, you're like, oh, this is a romance option.
You can tell because she's the boring one. Like, yeah, I actually really liked the tiefling thief, but, you can't. So, well, I guess I'll do the wood elf. I guess I'll have the wood elf romance sex times. And it was actually that, like, it just every so often she would be like, this reminds me of a thing I want to talk to you about. And we would have a romance conversation and I would get through it without literally saying, your parents are horrible. If you ever had children, they would be ugly. Everything you stand for is a lie. Also, watch me punch this puppy into a lake of fire, because that's just how I roll. And as a result, it's getting up to the end of the game. There's, like, an area where there's all the party members and other people, and, like, you could talk to them, and they're like, well, can't wait until the end happens. Can't wait until we go do the final thing. I can't wait until we go do the final thing. And I walked over to the druid lady, and she's like, excuse me, can I talk to you a moment? On the walls, alone. And so we go to the walls, and I think she actually just, like, basically says, we are about to reach the end of the relationship. Yes? No? And I'm like, yes.
I want to have sex with you. Do you want to have sex with me? Yes or no?
It pans up to the moon, implies we have sex, and then it cuts back to the room with everyone in it, and we're both back. And I go to talk to her again. She's like, I can't wait until the end happens. And I just literally burst out laughing. Because I was like, what the fuck was the point of that? That was so stupid.
There was a DM going, yeah, you totally have sex with her. Okay, and now it's over, and now back to the meeting. Back to the quest.
I actually think...
Also, you now have an STD. Shout out to Seamus's comics.
I think it might have even been dumber than that. She might have just said something like, yes, or not now.
You know, all the stuff I hear about Obsidian, and all the stuff I hear about Neverwinter Nights 2, and I wonder, how did Obsidian do Neverwinter Nights 2?
It was really bad. I mean, everybody talks about how the fucking expansion pack is apparently the revised testament of RPG design and how it brings together a masterful subversion of all tropes that would render J.R.R. Tolkien to his knees and make his head shrivel up and burn in fiery conflagration from shock and awe at how badly he has been outclassed. But I'm not going to touch it because the expansion is an expansion to Neverwinter Nights 2.
If I told you there was a sequel to Mein Kampf and it was really, really good and nothing to do with the original,
like,
I don't think you'd run out to the bookstore and buy
Mein Kampf. It starts with, oh yeah, I was wrong about those Jews.
Whoops, sorry.
Yeah. I got really high in prison, you guys. I don't know if you know what happens in prisons when it comes to drugs, but I was, like, high off my mind. I don't know what I was saying there. So this is my revised version of Mein Kampf.
Anyway, point being that ultimately, when I was, like, deciding whether or not to buy the Neverwinter Nights 2 expansion, I was just like, well, did the ending of the last game happen in a way that made me think that it's okay to give them more money to continue this story? And the way they ended the first game that I invested so many hours in was rocks fall, all of your characters die. And when that happened, I wasn't mad because that would require a little more investment in the storyline than I had. I was mostly just really, really surprised at how bad it was.
Yeah, sort of dumbfounded, like, wow, this isn't a joke? Somebody's not going to jump out and say, ha ha, just kidding. No, no, really, here's the real ending. It just was this sort of sense of shock, like, what?
Yeah, like, imagine if you're watching, like, a mediocre action vehicle, like, for some actor from the 90s or something, and they're trying to get their career restarted, and it's, you know, very paint-by-the-numbers, very, you know, generic, and you're like, yeah, you know, this is their worst waste to spend an evening, whatever. And then just, like, the last 5 minutes, the camera suddenly slips sideways and bounces on the pavement because it fell over, and they're like, oh, cut, sorry, drop the camera. Are we still rolling? Yeah, sorry, this is actually the last of the film we have. Oh, damn it. And then it cuts to credits. That's basically how Neverwinter Nights 2 ended. You wouldn't be upset. You'd just be, like, a little bit confused, but mostly impressed.
It wasn't even a cutscene, it was text on a fixed image.
Text
on a blurry fixed image.
Like, what, was it you go fight the last boss, and then, oh, by the way, all your characters died.
As you're escaping this tomb, it collapses on you.
Oh, it was literally rocks fall, everyone
dies. You fucking underestimated it.
And everybody's dead.
Yes. No, you go to fight the end boss. There's actually an interesting part where some of your party can betray you or stand up for you. And you have a fight. And then you have, after that, like, you have another hoedown with the same resources and same health and spells with the boss's, like, advanced form. And then after that, you have to fight his final form, which is so fucking horrible that I actually ended up just cheating my way through it. And then it, like, literally cuts to, like, a grainy screenshot slash concept art of, like, party members running from the cave, and a voiceover tells you, like, the party tried to flee from the cave, but it fell in, and none of them were ever...
Was there a voiceover? Or was it just
There was a voiceover, yeah.
Okay.
I think there was a voiceover for, the, like, reading the text, rocks, which is just, like, as they tried to run out of the cave, it collapsed on them, and they were never seen or heard from again.
The DM steps into the narration.
Okay, we actually got plenty of time here. Do you guys want to hear about the first Dungeons & Dragons campaign I was ever in?
Sure,
which
what
is also
the
worst Dungeons & Dragons campaign I've ever been in. Okay.
Tell us a story, Professor
Rusgarn. You know, there
Rusgarn.
Might be a correlation there.
So, I think that this is important to for anybody who wants to GM a game to be, because this GM taught me everything I know about running games. Because, oh boy, you walked out of his games just like, fuck, if I can make somebody feel like the opposite of this right now, that'd be pretty cool. Let's flash back to about a decade ago. I'm 12 years old, yeah.